baby.
All right, good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. I got it right. I got the day right.
You did. You missed it on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's Fridays. And that's Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Hey, good morning to you, Sandy. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. It's Friday. It's like you said. I did. I was listening to you Thursday. You had Thursday as Wednesday as Thursday, so I was afraid you weren't might not even be here today.
Hey, you know, man.
It's confusing.
It can be.
That calendar, gosh darn it.
You know, I don't even look at the calendar.
I know.
Maybe that's the problem.
There you go.
I mean, I don't know from day to day. I mean, what is today? The third. Okay.
It's the third.
Yeah.
Friday.
Yeah, well, thanks for reminding me. Yeah. You know, what's the point in having a watch or even where I keep my list for guests? I don't even look at that. You would think I would look at that every day, but I don't know, Sandy. I don't do it. And
well, that makes each day sort of an adventure. You just don't know what – you don't know where you are, when
you
it is,
it
or
to
what's going
to
happen.
Adventure when you're doing radio.
Oh.
So anyway, Sandy, a lot to talk about as usual, man. I wanted to ask you your thought on student loan debt.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, it's a major issue. There's no question whatsoever that there are tens of millions of people who are waiting on this outcome and this decision. And they're hoping that it is going to be yay, that they can wipe out $20,000 worth of debt. What is your thought?
Well, a couple of things. One, we're talking about the Band-Aid of solving only a past problem without solving the problem in the future.
Yeah, because
right?
It's still happening every
yeah,
day.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, so we're going to forgive some debt looking backwards, but what are we going to do about all the debt that people are incurring now and going forward? And the reason they're incurring this debt, of course, is because we don't provide free or promised low-cost education as long as you are, you know, qualified to take the course, like almost every other developed country. I mean, you can go to other countries all over the world, and the young students can proceed all the way up through into their professional career having an education that does not leave a big debt overhang, because it didn't cost them a lot of money. It didn't cost their parents a lot of money. And it's one more problem on top of no health care and no child daycare that our middle class is saddled with. Now, what do I think about the decision? I think the Supreme Court's probably going to say no. I think they're going to say that presidents don't have that kind of unilateral power. And as I was thinking about this on the way out here this morning, you know, with respect to foreign affairs, I'm quite troubled by the unilateral power of the president to get ourselves, our country, involved in international military adventures that cost billions and billions and billions of dollars without congressional oversight, like our Constitution basically requires. And of course, this decision by the president is a very enormously expensive decision. The forgiveness of all this debt ends up being a big dollar number. And so, you know, I'll be surprised if this Supreme Court says it's okay. And a part of me is against giving presidents so much unilateral power. But, you know, ever since the congressional blockade of Barack Obama, if the country is going to accomplish something, they really have, it's been set up now so that with paralysis in Congress, the only way to get something done is by presidential declaration, special action. And so, the machine is broken. Presidents try and fix it. They try to fix it with their unilateral power. The exercise of that unilateral power stresses at the constitutional division of power. And so, you know, what ultimately has to happen is Congress has to get fixed because it has to be capable of doing things.
You know, Sandy, you said the exact same thing that I said the other day about the fact that even if you were able to waive some of this debt, it's still happening every day.
Yeah, what are we going to do day after tomorrow? Forgiving this debt would suggest that debt is always going to be forgiven, because what's the difference between yesterday's debt and the debt a decade from now?
So what are your thoughts, Sandy, about the fact that people are so far in debt when they come out of college? And unfortunately, there aren't a whole lot of jobs that they're going to be able to get that are going to put them in a position where they can start paying that debt down before they can build and get to a position where they have enough disposable income that they can afford to rent a house, a car, and just be able to grow in a normal manner because of this debt.
Well, you know, the when I work on that budget for the $64,000 median income family in Wisconsin, and that money is all used up before they buy food, before they buy clothes, before they pay off student debt, before they save money for their children's going to school. So the person getting out of college today with a bunch of debt will not be able to buy a home. Will have a huge debt overhang that will be a credit problem for them in terms of achieving credit worthiness during the first half of their lifetime, at least. It puts people into a hole, a financial hole, that is very troublesome, particularly in light of the fact that the way our socioeconomic system is developed, they're going to have to pay for their own health care. And they're going to have to pay for their own child daycare, so they defer having children. We're already seeing it. Young people today aren't having children. They can't afford it. A debt overhang is a big part of that. Children, young people are not being able to buy houses. Well, a big reason for that is the debt overhang.
So you're a guy who believes in education, the importance of it. When is our nation going to take a long, hard look at that and say it does not make sense that young people are graduating owing $80,000. I mean, that's, you know, they've got people owing $200,000.
Right.
And so, Sandy, trying to pay off those debts, and I remember talking about the fact that when we had industry, they could come out of college, no matter what their background was, walk into industry in management and be able to make a decent living and also be able to pay off their debts early. But there aren't any jobs comparable for the most part, like all those middle management industry jobs that come even close. There's none of those left.
Well,
where do they go?
When I started college, there was no such thing as student debt. And either you and your parents together figured out how to grind it out, and student debt really allowed the socioeconomic system in our country to cause parents to be able to stop sacrificing so much to send their kids to college and say, you want to go to college? Well, you're the one that's going to have the bigger income because you go to college, so you'll incur the debt. And so you know, parents could keep buying snowmobiles and whatever it was that middle-class America wanted to have. And so... My concern about the whole student debt thing is it's just typical of politics today. We're solving yesterday's issue, but we're not solving tomorrow's problem.
So, Sandy, how do you begin and the government can make this happen, right? I mean, this is not an impossible thing. Should be able to figure this out.
Well, the government was talking, and there was congressional talk about funding and providing funding for instance, free community college, okay? And that's the way that's the way the conversation has to shift. We have to shift towards solving the underlying problem of why only in this country do so many young people graduate from school with a huge debt overhang that is an overhang not just on them but on the economy, because it is stifling these generations that are coming out with all this debt are subjected to a whole different set of financial issues that puts them behind the eight ball, unable to catch up and to live the life that the baby boomers and the X generation were able to live.
You know, it is more than heartbreaking. I mean, I know people who 60 years old, Sandy, they still owe student loan debt because, you know, unless, you know, you're really brilliant and able to come out, Sandy, and get a well-paying job.
Yeah.
And your parents weren't able to financially pay your way through college. I know many people who had to take on that debt.
Well,
and say you become a school teacher. I mean,
well, I think there's some of the programs have forgiveness for jobs like school teaching where they don't have to pay as much back. But and so you can use school debt, I suppose, to funnel people into jobs that the economy wants them to fill. But I've been on the board of a couple of schools, a medical school and an undergraduate school. And the financial aid office of both those places spends most of their time helping the students undertake the debt they need to undertake to go to school. So that most schools in this country are not endowed in such a manner that they can provide money out of their own pocket to students to go to the school. So schools will discount, you know, they have a sticker price for their tuition. They'll discount the sticker price down amount, but if the student can't go, they will require that every student incur some debt in order to offset the amount of discount that they're giving the student. And so, you know, schools are fundamentally involved with helping students get in debt so they can go to the school.
So you just said a mouthful. Got to go to a break, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. So say it. So.
Right on.
At 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. And on the line, Tom from L.A. Good morning to you, Tom. How you doing, man? You're always the first guy, man. That's we can count on that.
I know, right? And I'm up early at 4 in the morning.
Yeah, I know, man. And don't think we don't appreciate
crazy.
It. But go ahead.
That's how much I like your show, Earl. First off, we the people are the government ultimately, and I hope that we the people actually wake up and realize where it is that we're actually investing our money that we actually use. So as an example, we could take, you know, one of those bombers that we have from the military-industrial complex and take care of all the student debt probably that's out there. But again, for some reason, you know, people are brainwashed into this idea of machismo and brainwashed into this idea of, you know, patriotism equals war, I guess. And we spend all our money there. We're not investing money there. We're spending money there because it doesn't bring us back anything as a return on investment. You educate a kid, you're going to have a better society. You're going to have a better world. You're going to have the amount of return on investment on that is going to be incredible. And if you get back to Sandy's $64,000 hypothesis, I guess you'd say. He's absolutely correct. Now we got student loan debt on top of it. No one's going to be able to buy a house. Everyone's living in credit card debt. We've gone from the biggest creditor nation to the biggest debtor nation in the world because of the policies of Ronald Reagan. And I just don't understand how it is that people can't take a simple equation. And I really, really wish Republicans that call into the show would actually answer the question. There's $64,000 for things like child care, taxes, mortgage, and health insurance. And what are people supposed to do if they don't have generational wealth? They're not going to be able to make it in the future, plus student loan debt on top of everything else. It's a very, very simple, on the back of an envelope type of math that's there, and nobody ever seems to want to answer that question, along with the fact that they listen to a news operation that's been lying to them, and they can't answer that question either, how it is that they feel like they're not suckers because of the fact that they've been lied to. Anyway, I really think that this is some pretty simplistic stuff when you look at it, and we the people need to realize where their priorities go.
You say it's pretty simplistic. The debt, Sandy, that people have taken on is owed to somebody, right?
Well, a bunch of it is owed to the government, then a bunch of it is owed to private banks. The government has laid off the debt to private entities. It is a financially, it's all become sort of a complex stew. You know, you talked about the question about the $64,000 that I had to smile because I'm old enough to remember a TV show that everyone used to watch called the $64,000 question. So maybe we've got something here. Maybe that's what we'll style this whole issue as, the $64,000 question. No, it is complicated. And the problem is that the paralysis of Congress, the unwillingness of our society to decide to bear the cost of education as an investment, like Tom describes, like every other developed country has done. I mean, those people aren't doing it because it's a welfare state, because they want to give away education. They're doing it on a very reasoned basis. I mean, it probably is dualistic. They do understand the humanity of educating fellow man. But they also understand the benefit to their society and their economy of having people be well-educated and well-trained so they can come into the economy and be very active participants in it. And the other societies in the world see that investment value. And we want to take advantage of the investment of education, but we want to lay that off on Tom, Dick, and Mary. And with the changes in the way Tom, Dick, and Mary's salary is currently burdened by other things that other societies take care of, healthcare in particular, it's a ruinous direction, you know?
Sandy, I have a proposition to make as well. What if we actually change the definition of a corporation is just to actually, make a profit? To the fact that the definition of a corporation is to see how many people's lives you can actually change that work for you, and you actually invest in your people. Because the thing I keep hearing about is how the younger generation, is lazy. Oh, the younger generation is, all these different things. Well, I'm sorry, people. We have created this younger generation to want things immediately. We have created the younger generation not to pick up a piece of paper on the ground and throw it into a trash can. We have created this because of the fact that we don't have the education and the standards that we used to have. So stop blaming the kids. The kids want to be structured. The kids want to have some type of structure in their life. And when I coach football, these kids are thriving and are just, they want to be told what it is to have some leadership above them. And if we don't have that, because we don't have teachers going into the teaching field because they can't make it, we don't have, the corporations are really stupid. They should want to invest in education
Tom, we got to go to a break, man. Thank you very much for the call. Got to go to a break. It's Friday. That's Friday with Sandy Williams, my co-host. We'll be right back. I see you, Dave. We'll be coming to you. You can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Let's go to David from Mequon. Hey, good morning, David. How you doing, man? What is your thought, man? Should we?
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Earl. Good morning, Sandy. Well, obviously, you know I have a different take on this. I went to the University of Minnesota. I paid my way through school. Obviously, that was a much longer time ago when I graduated back in 1994. But regardless, what a lot of people do not understand is this. There's a lot of people that actually go to college and actually drop out. There's only, I think it's, and I saw it on research.com recently, I think it was like last year, only 41% of people go to college actually graduate in 4 years, and roughly about half in the whole scheme of things. A lot of them drop out between freshman and sophomore year. The reason being, some people realize, oh my gosh, my roommate that I had in my first year, I had three different roommates my first year. The first one I had, he actually decided he didn't like the University of Minnesota. It was too much. And he decided, you know what, I'm going to do something entirely different. He dropped out after the first year of college. The second roommate I had was actually a guy from Miami. He hated the weather, and he wanted to transfer to somewhere else. The third one was just a frat guy. He literally went to school just to party. And I think a lot of people have this misnomer that college is going to open up all these different avenues. And the reality is there's a lot of majors that actually – that people don't realize the major they get into do not pay well. So they do, to Sandy's point, some of these do not pay well and they get burdened with these loans, and there's not a, they're not told, you know, when you're in your freshman year in your college, you're not told, you know, how much you're going to make and all this other stuff. They're just, you know, they just take your classes, you know, go with your major, and then that's it. There's very little financial advice that's given in that whole scheme of things. And then secondly, I would add that now I just saw Columbia University, Ivy League school. They're dropping their SATs and ACT scores because they want to be more diverse. And what bothers me with that is that it really is dumbing down, I think, for people going future with the college end of things. So that's just my opinion, but I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, that was a mixed salad of opinions, Dave. You know, I think that Earl and I were talking off the air about the fact that I think society is beginning to wake up that, first of all, having a college degree – or necessarily pursuing a, quote, white-collar future was not possibly, in today's world, the best way to assure yourself of financial solidarity and rapid entry into a comfortable middle-class environment because, you know, in today's world, an HVAC technician, a plumber, an electrician, people who are specialized have a couple of things going for them. One, technology is not going to replace them. Pipes are not going to get replaced by silicon chips. Two, there's a shortage of them in today's world, and there's a premium being paid for them. Three, education to get into it is low cost. And four, it is subject to being a very respected kind of a future and a respected career, and there's plenty of income being earned and comfortable middle-class lives being lived. And so, you know, our society needs to adjust itself. We need to stop thinking about the difference between blue collar and white collar as being a matter of prestige. And two, I think a number of people who go to college have to understand that the expense they're going to incur is not going to be rewarded with an income level that is commensurate with what they're paying to get there. But overall, my problem with the whole thing is the American system is just cockamamie because we are charging a lot of money for this education investment that society is reaping the benefit from. And in every other developed country, they look at it differently. And they aren't burdening the student themselves or the families of the students for the ambition of the student to enter society in some kind of a successful way. And so I think American politics is fraught with this problem. We're fixing a current sore. We're putting a Band-Aid on the sore, student debt, but we aren't fixing the problem, which is the cost of education and the whole educational system.
Let's go to Gary from Sussex. Good morning, Gary. You say what?
Like Sandy was talking exactly about me. I went to college in 1972, 1 year. I dropped out, I got married in 73, and have to pay that back for that 1 year that I was in college, okay? And my wife was also in college, and we had to pay that back. So we started out in debt, okay? We drove around. I had a 1961 Ford Falcon, a piece of junk with about 120,000 miles on it. And back in those days, 120,000 is like 500,000 on a car nowadays.
Was it light blue? Was it light blue in color?
No, it was a four-door white.
Oh.
Yeah. It was ugly. It looked like a grandma's car. But you know something?
You know, I'm old enough to remember what a 1961 Falcon looks like.
I just always think of a light... I always think they're light blue, but it's white. Okay.
No, ours was white. And you know what it cost us? It cost us zero. Somebody felt so sorry for us that we had no money and we were just living on love. We were just young. My wife was 19 and I was 20. And they just gave us a car, which was wonderful. But back to the subject, what we're talking about. And we paid it back. My son just graduated recently from Marquette University, and he's in the process of paying back that debt. And that's almost $200,000. My daughter paid hers back. So they're not in favor of this. And you know what? Joe Biden knew when he said that he's going to go out there and give everybody their $20,000. He knew, just like Sandy knew, that's illegal. You can't do that. And Sandy even said this morning, which I really... You know, I love listening to you, Sandy, because, you know, you're honest. You're not a yes man guy to Earl. You know, Earl's a little bit more left than you are.
Wait a minute, man. And,
yeah, you are, Earl. Okay. And the fact is, you're not a yes man. And, you know, and when I talked to you other times, too, you agreed with me when Earl didn't, and, you know. But this is what I think how to solve this. My son, when he went to Marquette, most of the teachers he had were TAs. They weren't even professors. And, you know, these professors are making so much money because they're doing all their studying and all that sort of stuff. And they just have their TAs teach. Give these professors less money. Have these kids pay off their loan, but make it a 0% interest loan. I would, and I bet you even Dave from Mequon and Tom from LA would probably agree with a 0% interest loan.
Hey, what planet?
Because it teaches you to pay back.
Gary, I don't agree with you sometimes because what planet are you on? They're not going to do any 0% interest.
Well, I think they could because what they currently do is charge zero interest during the period of schooling, and they don't accrue interest during that period either. So you are getting zero interest loans for a period of time, and then they start applying interest to it at the tail end of it. But I just have a problem with someone like your son. I think a system is broken when someone graduates from school with $200,000 of debt. I think that overhang is horrible. And I think that if he lived in Canada, or if he lived in England, or if he lived in Germany or Sweden or Norway or France, it's a long list of countries, he would graduate with no overhang of debt.
You know, Sandy, let me ask you again, because you can see a time actually when you think it's 0% interest.
No, I'm not saying they'll do it, but my problem is they need to fix the problem. And Gary's talking about a way to improve the problem. I'd like to see the problem fixed. I think we should continue to have private schools that do charge for people who but what will happen is the number of schools that will remain will be the well-endowed schools that can actually provide financial aid to their students. Like I said, most of the private schools in this country are not endowed in such a manner that they can give money to the student. The best they can do is discount the price. And when they discount the price, they almost always ask the student to incur debt to so that they don't have to discount the price as deeply as they would to allow the student to go there.
So there's a reason why there are universities all over the nation. It does not matter almost what the person's grade at GPA was when they left high school. There are universities that will take them in, even knowing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you and I were graduating, there was Milton College. I can talk.
Yeah, I remember Milton.
I can talk about it because it doesn't exist anymore. But it was called Flunk You, and the reason it was is they would take anybody, and it was a way to avoid Vietnam, quite frankly. And they were a low grade school, but during Vietnam, people were willing to go to school at any cost to not go to Vietnam and have a student deferment, and Milton was one of those. The most famous graduate they had was a quarterback named Krieg, who played in the
Craig, yeah.
Yeah, played
Seattle
in the,
Seahawks.
Yeah, he was a good quarterback. I didn't even know Milton had football, but the school fell into demise.
Yeah, a couple of my high school friends, football players, played at Milton.
Yeah,
you know, but I mean that's the point. There's an opportunity to make money in those instances, and maybe they may wind up with students, Sandy, that couldn't get in other universities.
Most universities are not for profit, so they can stay in business and employ their faculty based on that. The one group that was preying on the students with poor GPAs were the for-profit schools and the internet schools, and they were the ones that during the Obama administration there was a fair amount of congressional investigation about the profiteering they were doing at the expense of student loans,
like Trump University.
Yes.
CJ, what's going on, man? Not coincidental that we're talking about Trump University when you come on, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'm used to that. But, you know, you guys, thank you for taking my call. We already pay, whether you have children or not, as taxpayers. Do you have an idea how much people pay for public schools, say, in Milwaukee right now, per student?
Well, but you're talking about, you're talking about kindergarten through high school. We're talking about post-high school education. So, yeah, everyone. I mean, clearly, someone has to pay for education. Taxpayers pay for education if the users of the education don't pay for education. And every country has taxpayer supported education for K through high school. I mean, at least we're up to speed on that one. And yeah, you know, our property taxes, a significant portion of our property taxes goes to school education, which, as far as I'm concerned, I don't begrudge it because I feel education is an investment. And I would hope that the schools can fulfill the quest we have to put these students in a position where they can perform in the economy.
And I think if I remember correctly, CJ, you said you have four daughters and they took advantage of the educational system that was in place.
I paid extra for them to go to private school. But the mere fact is we're failing our kids right now. We pay over $12,000, whether you have children or not. Oh, I guess I'm being cut off.
How are you being cut off, man? It's break time.
I hear music. You're going to break, right?
Yeah, that doesn't mean you're being cut off.
Oh, yeah, we always always plan a break when CJ calls, though. That's not true, CJ.
So we got to go to a break, man. Hang on. 844-967. Stop being so sensitive. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. Friday's with Sandy.
Chaka Khan. Shaka Khan, let me rock it, let me rock it, Shaka Khan. Let me rock it, that's all I wanna do. Shaka Khan, let me rock it, let me rock it, Shaka Khan. Let me rock it, got the feel for you. Shaka Khan, what you tell me, what you wanna do? Do you feel for me the way I feel for you? Shaka Khan, let me tell you what I wanna do. I wanna love you, wanna hug you, wanna squeeze you too. And let me take it in my arm, let me feel you with my charm.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Let's go to the phone lines again and CJ. CJ, yes.
Thank you, gentlemen. This will be overturned because it's not right.
It's not going to be overturned. It never went through, so it can't. It's not overturned.
Well, thank you. Thank God, because we do a poor job teaching our kids first finance in primary school. And to expect people who didn't go to college for someone who promised to pay their loans back, this was all about buying votes. That the mere fact you could see, oh, people are so excited that they're going to get all the way up to $250,000 a year. People making are going to get their loans forgiven. That is a bunch of crap. And that's why it should be overturned. And thank God it never went through, and it won't. And to listen to the arguments for this to happen, Sandy speaks like we don't do enough for our kids already. We got to pay for other people.
Well, now wait, CJ, took my name in vain there because I was saying that I thought it was going to be overturned. I was saying that I thought the loans and loan forgiveness was fixing a broken situation. I do believe that we ought to provide education to children and grown and young adults as do other nations. I think we ought to be willing to make the same investment in our children that other developed countries do, and I think you and I maybe have a disagreement in that regard. Maybe you don't believe in public education. It sounds like you don't.
I think we're failing our kids right now. You said it. You think it should be overturned, or you don't think it should go through. Are you happy it did? Do you think it should have gone through?
I've had a problem with a blanket forgiveness program because of all the equity. I've talked about it on earlier shows at earlier times. It's an issue fraught with lots of complexity as to the equities within it. And so it's hard to design a forgiveness program that makes sense. The problem with the forgiveness program is what happens to the debt 5 years from now and 10 years from now that's built up. So I think a forgiveness program is a Band-Aid. I think that to the extent it would be done for short-term economic issues in the economy. And I think that to some extent the loan program as administered by the federal government has helped lure students into undertaking much more debt than made sense for them. And so I don't know what is done to be done about that. That's sort of a societal crime. Because there are people carrying way too much debt. I felt very badly when the prior caller described a son who graduated from Marquette with $200,000 of debt. So I think student debt generally is a big problem.
Well, I think debt people not being taught finance in high school instead of CRT and finding out what we
CJ, let me say this to you, man. You know, number one, there's something wrong with a system that encourages people to take on the kind of debt that we are talking about. that becomes an albatross around their necks for early in their lives, and they carry it far too long. And yes, there is a system that encourages that to happen. And as a nation, we can and should do better. You know, just because you lead people to believe that, you know, this is an easy undertaking and come on, let's go to college, you're going to live a great life, that's not the case. And it shouldn't be that easy for people to get to be, you know, $200,000 in debt.
Well, and the other thing is, I think that what we do is obscure the actual fundamental issues involved here by hyperbole, like teaching finance rather than CRT.
What else is he going to say, man?
Well, yeah. I don't know. I just mean, I think I'm talking to CGA now. I just think that we ought to kind of keep our eye on the ball and without exaggeration. And so, you know, the problems of kids coming out of school is hardly to be pinned on anything like CRT. First of all, that's an issue that suddenly cropped up in the last year and a half or two. The problems of the outcomes of our schools have been decades long.
Let's do this. Let's bring in line three. Who do we have on line three? Just bring her up. Hey, good morning. How are you? Thank you very much for the call. Who do we? She just hung up. Okay. CJ, quickly.
Well, the mere fact that, you know, we didn't teach our kids finance, and we did find out what they weren't learning when COVID happened and was homeschooled.
Well, CJ, just 1 second. Slow down a minute. You, I don't know, you aren't as old as I am, but you're old enough to have, I presume you either went to a parochial school or a public school growing up. Did you have finance taught to you in grade school or high school? Because I did not.
And neither did I.
And I graduated with and developed a fine sense of all of that and through my experience outside of school. So, you know, that's fun to say, but it isn't true to your experience, because I'm confident you were not taught finance in grade school or high school.
No, my dad and mom taught me.
Okay, so that's the point. You're fortunate that you had a dad and mom who could do that for you. Everybody did not have that.
Most kids don't have parents that teach them that anymore.
Okay, so
they're more worried about
parents did not
crap.
You know what, CJ? Everybody doesn't know finance, and understanding finance is not an easy thing.
Well,
and it's not as easy as you want to make it seem.
Well, we might be making the case for more teaching of finance in school. My only point was that not teaching finance in school has not in the past been a recipe for disaster for the people who go to school, because in our vintage of people, nobody learned finance in grade school or high school. The closest thing that we got to it was home economics, and that used to be for girls, you know?
Yeah.
And they didn't really learn it either there. So, our education system is evolving, and I think it, quite frankly, there is more lesson now in financial type issues.
All right, we got to go to break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.